Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 89, being recorded on the 12th of August, 2015. I'm Sujit Mello, and on Skype with me, I have Kale Teeter and Evan Basilik. Nice to have all of us on the call together for a change.
Yeah, no, it's great. And actually, that intro is so much smoother when Sujit does it.
Hey, you guys did a good job. Come on, don't tell you some short there.
wait, I thought I told you it took us like 3 tries to get it right.
Hey, how do you know? Sometimes I re-record these things after the recording, you know, and redo them sometimes. Yeah, that's true. It happens. Yeah, that's the beauty of being post-production.
But yeah, exactly.
It's nice to have everyone on. And as a matter of fact, I'm in Houston for a Microsoft event, and of course, Kale is in Atlanta at a customer, and Evans and
I am in poor, lonely Charlotte, not on the road.
Charlotte, yeah.
So I'm gonna go home and sleep in my own bed tonight. Sorry, guys.
Happy you. Well, before we get to the main topic for today, which was Evan's suggestion, we talk about application insights, and it's a good topic. We haven't really, you know, dug into that in detail, so it'll be a good topic to get into. But before that, Kale was nice enough to put up a few recent updates to the Azure service. Kale, is there some that you'd like to talk about in that list?
Yeah, there's a couple here that stand out to me anyhow that are close to me. Data Factory going GA was pretty awesome. So we talked about that in the, I think it was the last time we talked or the time before, but when Visual Studio 2015 came out, you know, we have those new templates in there now. And been speaking to people recently about that. A lot of people didn't even realize that was in there. And so like, oh, wow, because it was like a thing for them. Like, I don't want to write a bunch of templates. Can you give me something to create these, you know, data sources and pipelines and stuff? So it's awesome that it's GA now. So it's a, I guess, I don't know, we were talking about this earlier. It's a, I guess it's a supported service now, Evan.
yeah.
So that's pretty close to me. And the other one that was big was, we'll put it in the show notes, but I called it storage goodness. But there's a lot of new stuff. And one of the key things with the storage, there's a bunch of new things that come out for it. One of the two things that stand out for me were being able to append to a blob now. So in the past, we basically, you know, you had block blobs and you could upload your block list. But now we have the ability to go ahead and append to those. So I think one of the big use cases was logs and things like that, where we're constantly adding to these things. So that might make that a little better. And the other one was client-side encryption, which has been in, I think, public preview for a little while. So now that's generally available, and that's a big one for enterprises. So being able to hold the keys to the encryption before you put that data up there and have it kind of work seamlessly instead of you having to reinvent the wheel there.
Yeah, the Azure File Service stuff actually jumped out at me because I was working that little while that was potentially going to land on my team. And, man, that's like the things that we've added around the shared access stuff is kind of neat, because that was one of the challenges that I know people had is they wanted to use Azure Files, but you couldn't leverage the typical blob, you know, the typical Azure blob storage goodness of the shared access stuff. Right?
Yeah, I think it looks like files. It looks like they're doing a lot to kind of bring it in feature parity with, like, blobs.
Right, yeah, that's what I think that's probably a fair statement. Like, it seems like, and maybe I'm too far away from my development side. I mean, maybe you can help here, Kale. Is what, if we get feature parity between blobs and files, what's the difference? Isn't a file just a small blob?
Yeah, I think it would probably depend on the scenario, especially, like, I know that a lot of people use Azure Files for migrations and things like that where they don't want to make a lot of code change.
Right.
Like, definitely when you're doing blobs, you're writing code. because
oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah, because the APIs are completely different at that point.
Yep.
Okay.
But yeah, I think like they have the server-side copy now feature, which is kind of cool up there. That's something that got really enhanced in blob storage, which was really nice. You could copy between data centers. But the one thing I didn't know, and someone enlightened me this just recently, but not only can you in blob storage do, you know, copies between different regions and those kind of things, but you could also say, hey, I got some files up here in, let's say, some pictures in Google's photo thing. And you can basically give it a URL and have it go do it all on the web. Like it can go to Google and pull that thing and put it over in blob storage without you intervening. So it doesn't have to pull it down to your client to bring it over, which is kind of
neat. Cool.
Yeah, I didn't realize that was a feature, but
so it's basically just a server side copy, but it allows you to use a source or I guess a source of a URL.
Yeah, outside of Azure. So that's kind of neat.
Yeah, that is pretty. Yeah, that I remember when the. I still remember, and I kind of felt bad for the customer because I felt a little bad pointing it out after the guy had fought it, but there was a customer that was trying to move his VHDs from one data center to another because there's some, I can't remember what the feature was, but some feature that wasn't yet in some data center. And the poor guy, I mean, he had like multiple VMs that he had to pull down, or he was not, didn't have to. He was pulling down to his local machine, right? And these are, you know, what, 130 gig OS drives, plus he had his data drives. He's pulling all this stuff down. It's taking forever to copy, and then he's having to upload it. And I was like, there is this server-side copy feature that then uses our internal data. And it like, he did his last couple of VMs that way, and it, you know, took almost, I think we were talking minutes to copy over everything versus, you know, days to do any given VM. Because, yeah, there's a huge performance difference between those two types of getting stuff between two different data centers. So,
yeah, the other one that stands out is something I used to do a long time before Microsoft was the Content Delivery Network. So there's been some features added there. It looks like you can do compression now. That's kind of native as part of the platform and some country filtering, but then also they have analytics, which kind of ties into the discussion today about App Insights.
Yeah, and then Azure Backup, which is another one of those services which we don't really talk about a whole lot, but has finally got some enhancements. Previously, it was limited to, I think the size of each data source in the backup was limited to 1,700 gigabytes, which is like 1.7 terabytes. And now they've increased that to, I think, over 54 terabytes. So quite a jump there. So customers that have big VHDs that they want to back up in Azure Backup, they can do that now.
Yeah, I may need to go track down which team, because again, my team, we had one of my colleagues on a long, long time ago, Will Effinger, to talk about Azure Backup, but now Azure Backup has completely changed, right, from where it was. I may have to track down which team owns that now and get one of those guys on to talk about the current state, because we call it Azure Backup Online, I think it is, where you're just basically snapshotting your Azure VMs, right? It's designed for an Azure aspect. So yeah, that's some really cool things to see coming in that space.
Yeah. I got to do the math there. What is this 54,400? So it's 54.
It's later on. If you look a little bit underneath, the 64 terabyte is really their limit, 65,536 gigabytes, but apparently they have metadata.
I see.
I am a little bit curious here that what do you need? Let's see, that's 54 terabytes. What do you need 10 terabytes of metadata for? That's a lot of metadata.
It is a lot, yeah.
Well, maybe
they're just being cautious.
Maybe that's the worst-case scenario. If you have a number of small, I don't know, if it's made up of a number of smaller data sets, you know, each
God,
one.
How
has,
many little files would you have to have 10 terabytes of metadata?
Yeah, a lot.
Give us a quick number crunch there, Sajid. What do you think?
Okay. And then another recent enhancement has been more in the Japan region. Azure Premium Storage is now generally available. Now, this is our SSD-based storage, for the IO-intensive workloads. This is now, I think you can have up to 32 terabytes of persistent storage per virtual per VM, and you can tweak the IOPS that you want. You have they go all the way up to 64,000 IOPS per VM. So I mean, this is now available in Japan. It was previously in preview in Japan and is now generally available. Good. So that's, I think, is that it? Did I miss something?
No, I think that's at least the one. I'm sure there's a whole bunch we missed as well, but those are the big ones that I'm aware of.
Yep, sounds good.
So, topic for the day is application insights. And Evan, it sounds like you may have done some work on that area recently.
Yeah, so I actually, just a little bit of context. I have in my role, right, we do 24/7 support, but the challenge that we've always had is that if a customer calls in after I've left, I'm sorry, we don't do phone support anymore, not directly. Like they don't call no queue like they used to years ago. So if a customer needs help after I leave, the only way they can do it is send an email, and then we can get it to somebody else. But we've kind of had this challenge ever since we went to 24-hour support of, I have to remember to turn on my OOF message to say, hey, I'm gone for the day. This is how you get a hold of somebody else. And was working with a colleague who kind of had a similar idea. He had done half of it, and I'd kind of done half, so we put our stuff together. And we have this utility that we're using to do this. But what we wanted to do was we wanted to understand, like, this is out in the wild now, right? It's just kind of granularly, or I'm sorry, not granularly, organically growing through the support org. And we wanted to understand who's using it, because, we do get reviewed, right? I mean, that's a great review bullet. But on top of that, we want to understand, are people getting exceptions and they're not telling us? Are we, if we put in a new feature or functionality, is anybody using it, right? Do we want to enhance it? All that kind of stuff. So I had done this in the past with, you stand up a SQL database, and then you write some SQL calls, and then you insert your data, then you run queries and try and generate reports. And that's a lot of work, right? I mean, writing telemetry for an app that is challenging, right?
Yeah, it's
So
kind of like boilerplate code, right? You have to go do for
absolutely,
every
right? I mean,
app.
that's like there's no fun code in that, right? It's cut and paste and just SQL statements. So I had kind of heard about this Application Insights thing, but I hadn't really ever played with it. So just kind of one afternoon, I had done a whole bunch of new code in this app, and I said, let me go check out this Application Insights stuff, man, because it would be great to be able to see this stuff. And I started looking at it, and it was incredibly easy to enable. So I've been playing with it now for about a month, and we're using it on our production app, and now I can just get all this live data. I mean, it really is real time. Or just slightly lag. I mean, it looks like it's minutes. I get real-time telemetry on who's doing what they're doing, how many people are using it, and what's really neat is this is a Windows app, right? So it runs as a .NET app on a Windows machine. But you can do it's even slicker when you do like Android or iPhone, or I'm sorry, Android, iOS, or Windows Store apps or Windows Phone apps. It's even easier to plug those things as you literally just have a checkbox to turn it on. And what it does is it cuts it down to, there's, I don't know, maybe two or three lines of code to basically say, here's my application key, right? You see that with a lot of apps, right? This is my auth key that identifies me. And then every time I want to record an event, it's one line of code. Client or Application Insights client dot, track exception, track event, track custom event. I mean, one line of code wherever I want to do that makes it incredibly easy to instrument wherever I want to do it. And I don't have to know or care about anything under the covers.
Now, how do you actually start though? Do you have to do something in the Azure portal before you get started to get that ID?
Yeah, good point. So like a lot of things in the Azure space, you go out to the portal, you pick, from the depending on whether you're in the new portal or the old portal, you browse to where you're creating a new service, and then you pick an Application Insights service. You pick a project name or name for your Application Insights deployment, and then what you get back is you get back the little unique identifier key, and that's it, right? You don't there is you can depending on the platform you're on, you may have to do a NuGet. To kind of bring the package in. But for a Windows app, you didn't even, actually, I take that. There was a NuGet for the Windows stuff as well. But once you do the NuGet package, you just basically set up the two lines of connection code back to Application Insights, and then you're off and running. What I think has really kind of impressed me is not only just was it incredibly easy from a code perspective, but now when I go out to, and maybe we'll grab a quick screenshot or something like that for the show notes, but if I can go out to the Application Insights portal and I can see real-time graphs and, you know, I can filter and I can kind of, you know, do whatever slicing and dicing in my data that I want with built-in capabilities. I don't have to build a whole reporting engine on top of everything.
Right. Yeah, I think one thing, Evan, too, that maybe just a little history here, but so the new one is in the portal, but the old one was kind of ESO, right? Is that the history of this
thing? Yeah, I think that's the history. Is it was originally designed for stuff that was, you know, kind of, and I guess it was for websites maybe, because those were very integrated with ESO, but you're right, it kind of now is very standalone.
Yeah, and one thing I know recently, a colleague was talking to me about App Insights and the changeover. So, like, it used to be when you were in VSO, that's where the dashboards were you were talking about and those kind of things when they first started. But they had the client side, which is what you were talking about, and then they also had the server side. And so you could take, like, your worker roles or your web roles, and you could pull this little package down. You could, you know, deploy that out to these things. And then it would correlate data. So you could say, like, here's how much memory is on. But now it's like, well, what happened to those packages? So I was like, wait a second. Yeah, what did happen to those packages? And a lot of that stuff is happening without you deploying agents now. So when you pop that thing out,
it's kind of built into the framework now of those platforms.
Exactly, right. Yeah. So it makes it even easier to get both server-side. You can see memory usage on your server plus client-side statistics, like, right beside each other. Like,
yeah, and I think that, to me, was kind of the thing that amazed me is I think I got the impression from reading through the docs when I was setting this up is that Windows apps, not Windows Store apps, but Windows apps themselves, weren't really an initial. The mobile world was driving a lot of that, but it wasn't quite as slick with the Windows app, but it was just incredibly amazing. It was amazingly easy to just turn it on. Like I turn, you know, so we have our Windows Phone app version of the podcast site, right? So it goes in and pulls in our most recent podcast. The last time I had to make a small change to that, I actually went in and put our good pictures of us in. As I was publishing it, the Windows App Store basically said, "Hey, do you want to turn on Application Insights?"
Oh, that's awesome.
For this, you know, this app, this package as you're submitting. Like, I had written no code for this. There's absolutely no code in it. And so now, and I'm actually doing this now, as I can go into the application, the Azure portal, go into the I pin the Azure Podcast Application Insights, you know, thing in there, and it's telling me, you know, the number of sessions recently, the number of users. It's not a huge number, but we have somebody in Algeria that is using the app. That's kind of cool. If the app had exceptions, right, all that would stuff be in it. It tells me what devices are using the app. I'm not sure how there's an Optiplex 380. I'm not really sure how that app got into a phone app. Maybe when I was testing something. it says, you know, daily active user. I mean, all this stuff that tells you about the telemetry, your live stuff, where you just check the box.
Yeah, and that's the kind of the, it gives you the equivalent of track requests, right? When you do it through the check. That's just tracking the end-to-end, call. Whenever you do anything in the application, like if you do it in a web app, you have that option to, in which case it's going to track every HTTP request.
Yeah.
And if you do it in the Windows Windows Phone app or in probably in a Windows Store app as well.
But I think it takes it one step further, right? Because it looks like when we inject this code in, right? Because and luckily the app hasn't crashed in the last 30 days or whatever this data period is, but if there was a crash, the way that we inject it in, I assume using a reflection, right, it would get crashes automatically. So I would get the call stacks and be able to see that.
Correct. So it's doing the track exception and the track request as well.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that's the part that I thought was amazing that we're actually using Reflection to inject this stuff versus me having to think about and code this, because I don't know if you guys remember, but I cheated on this app. I didn't write it. I went out to now I'm going to forget the name of it.
The application
Sienna?
Was
Project
the,
Sienna?
No, I think the wizard, right? They use that.
Yeah, the application studio, I think
studio,
it is.
Studio,
yeah.
And I basically, you know, I just follow the wizard and pull it in, and then I pull down the project, and then I publish it. Like, I never actually touched the code in that project. And so for that particular project with that particular tool to go and add in all this telemetry, now I'd have to break the App Studio copy, in essence, of my code. It's going to be broken from what I have locally. And now they're out of sync, and I can't make changes in the portal and have it carry over to the project. So this was, I was really, really blown away by how easy it was to turn it on. And I can imagine if you had this fairly complicated app where you had all, you know, different features and different functionality, and you're trying to decide, you know, do I enhance this feature? Does anybody use it? Maybe I just kill it, you know, all that kind of stuff. To have that kind of telemetry for no effort is really amazing.
Yep. And then I suppose you could go in and extend it even further, right, by using some of the other APIs you talked about with the telemetry client API. There's all these things called track metrics and events, and even the
It looks like you can build even like these custom events where, you know, you can kind of structure it however you want, or there's, you know, track there's specific kind of track event, you know, track page view, track, you know, a whole bunch of kind of basic stuff that's built in. But yeah, obviously it's fully extendable at that point.
Is this different plans and stuff like that? I guess one of the things customers or maybe listeners would be interested in is like how long is this data kept, and is there ways to kind of get the data out, like if I wanted to archive it or something? Or?
Yeah, so that's actually the biggest difference. For my particular stuff, I'm using the free tier. And the free tier, it's very transient, right? So I think it's maybe 7 days worth of data. And I can go export anything back to those 7 days. But if you wanted to, you can step up to the next tier, and at that point you can do what's called continuous export, where it takes your raw data and just stuffs it into a Blob storage account, and then you can, I guess theoretically it's unlimited, which you could store at that point. And I think there's also, I don't know about you guys, I always find these funny, there is probably a limit on the number of events on the free tier. But it's always, you know, it's always numbers like, hey, you can only do 100,000 events per day. Holy crap, if I got 100,000 events per day out of one of my apps, I'd be thrilled. Right? I'd be more than happy to bump up and pay for the next tier, right? Because maybe I was actually making some money off of it or something.
I think for the free tier, it's 100 per second, data points per second is the
number. The number is okay, yeah. You know, and but that's a lot of data points, right, if you think about it.
And in terms of the retention period, I believe that the raw points are kept probably for about 7 days in the free case. But then, you know how Application Insights allows you to aggregate the data. So you can roll up data over days or minutes, seconds, hours, whatever, into, you know, and if you roll it up, say, on a day basis, say every day you have a rolled up value, that you can keep for up to 13 months. But that's just the roll up data, and that kind of makes sense, right? You probably keep the last week very granular, and then, you know, you get less and less granular as you go further back in time. You don't really need super granular data from 2 months ago. You probably just want the rolled up data by then, you know.
Right. Yeah. Because I guess from the kind of the real time, the last 7 days, you're looking for, do we see some significant trend change or, you know, or something like that. Right. Yeah, at the highest tier, let's see, what is this? I'm looking. Yeah, so at the tier that I'm on, the kind of the low end one, I'm sorry, one tier up from where I am, where it's like all of $25 a month. It's $2 a month for every million additional data points. Come on, what's a million points? I mean, nothing. I'm sure I'm not coming anywhere near tapping anything of the overall functionality about this in terms of the ability to really see what's going on. My app's just not that complicated, but it really kind of opened my eyes to, wow, this would have been really hard.
Yeah, I mean, especially really the number of reports you get out of it is just amazing. You can slice and dice the data in so many ways. It's all graphically done for you right in the portal. You know, you don't have to pull it out into Excel if you don't want to.
Yep.
It does it all there for you. One of the questions I often get when it comes to application insights, matter of fact, my customer asked me this very question just a couple of weeks ago. They're trying to do something similar, more for an on-premise solution. And they were like, you know, okay, what's the performance overhead, right, that this thing adds? You know, you could go all over your code and instrument it up to gazoo, but everyone's worried, like, is this going to slow me down anymore? And so the way Application Insights works is, perhaps our listeners know, but I'll just quickly explain it, is that you know, it's making REST calls eventually, right, to store the data out into Azure, into the specific Azure service, the Application Insights service, and it gets recorded for your application ID. But the way they do this and not create an overhead to your application is the calls themselves are all asynchronous in nature, so they're not blocking calls. So you could call, you know, 1,000 times per request, and it would complete almost appear to complete almost immediately, but they're all queued up, and then they get batched up, and then at some interval those batches are sent to the Application Insights service, and the data, you know, is sent in a batch format. So not only does that reduce the overhead to the application, but it also reduces the number of calls that it's making out to the Application Insights service because it's all batched up, you know. So that's one thing that listeners should not be concerned about in terms of it, like, there is very, very minimal performance overhead to your application.
Yeah, I will say actually, because and now that you mentioned that, I remember that, because one of the things you do need to do is when you're, you know, debugging your code and you want to validate that the stuff is actually getting uploaded, there's a flag you can set that basically says don't batch.
Correct.
Right? Send it
Flush
as
it
I go
right
so that I
away.
can actually see that it's going. And it actually ends up writing out to the it's got a default listener that goes out to the standard output of you know, Visual Studio. So yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah, I guess the other thing along with that is it doesn't, there's no overhead for like some sort of crazy authentication or anything, right? Either it's just that key, right? And I think that's the one thing I've heard before too. People say, "Well, wait a second, you know, like this is client side. So you put your key out there. People could post data to that, and they could absolutely, right? But I guess the thing is, you can't really get to that data, right? So once the data is posted there, only people who have the right creds to log into that subscription that has your tenant could see the data. But actually, anybody can post to that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where, I mean, my kind of take on that is, you know, how likely is somebody to spam your
Yeah,
telemetry
telemetry.
system, right? You have bad telemetry now. I'm going to take your business down.
Well, it's not just the application ID that you need. You really need the application name as well,
Yep.
right? On top of that, and the user contact. So all of that forms the key, so to speak, right, for all these
Right.
entries. And
Right.
so the user does something. I mean, somebody writes a program to do it surreptitiously, then that's going to have a completely different set of data, and you'll know right away that's not one of yours.
So when Alvin comes in next week and says, "They said there wasn't a lot of Windows Phone users using this, but I have 200 million." That was me, Evan. I was doing it.
Well, no, it's actually funny you say that, Sajid, because one of the things that I was trying to do with the internal app was we're actually kind of moving down the path of, for my team, it's not just a recommendation that you set your OOF when you leave, it's a requirement, right? And so one of the things that we were playing around with was, could I actually kick back the user who's doing it to the system so that we could then just run a report and says, hey, all the people on the team are using it, you know, so just because they're not doesn't mean they're not turning their OOF on, but the people that are using it, there's no question it's slipping on and off when it's supposed to, right?
Right.
But I actually had to build a custom event to grab the username because the default user agent and everything is actually, I guess, abstracted away from the actual. It almost becomes like it anonymizes it,
Well,
right? So I know that there's multiple users by default, but I don't know, and I can tell user A from user B, but I can't tell who user A is. If that makes sense.
Well, I mean, I thought it has that the context, right? It's still, can't you
It
specify
does,
the
but I can't.
context?
I can't track it. Like, so the my app, right, it's running on a Windows machine, right? So I know the logged in users. Right. Theoretically, that app could say the logged in user is EvanBA, right? Because I can do a .NET call to figure that out. My original thought was I can just grab the user object that Application Insights uses, and, you know, and if I look at that object, it does know that I'm EvanBA. But when it uploads, and when I actually look at the data that goes up to the system, it doesn't uniquely identify me as EvanBA. Right. So for doing what we want to do, and because it's an internal tool, we can get away with it. Right. Some of the privacy stuff goes away there.
Right.
But for an internal tool, we actually had to write. I had to write special code to basically send as a custom event. Here's the user who's actually doing it.
Oh.
Right. So it was. You know. Again, it was. In some ways, it was a pain for what I was trying to do. But you know, if you look at it from a mobile app or you know something like that, like I don't want you know some company that just because I'm using their app, they know not only that, you know, kind of my phone ID, but they also know, you know, scrape my MSA or something like that. Like, I don't really want them to know that unless I explicitly tell them that.
Right, right. Okay. Yeah, but, so you were talking about the writing of the data, you know, to force it to write. There is an API called Flush, which does the same thing. So on the telemetry client, you could call Flush, and that would write it out immediately. That way, it's a more of a synchronous. So you know, you can check to see if the data is being put out to the server.
Right. Yeah. The other thing, and I just remember this one too, is the other thing that I thought was pretty neat was you know you get these fancy reports. Well, let's say you and I are working on a project together. Why should I only have all the reports?
Yeah.
The concept of the Application Insights appears to have the whole RBAC concept already built into it, where I can go say, "Hey, this other user in my corporate directory, I can add to this account, or I can add their MSA to it." So they have the ability to either go in and view the data, or to go in and administer the Application Insights. I guess project is not the right word for it. I'm not sure what the right word is for an Application Insights entity. But they have the I can give them some granular control so they can go in and see the data themselves as well. So that was nice because I didn't want to always have to give this other guy the data all the time. Right now he can just go get it whenever he wants to.
Right. Great. No, I agree. This is something that every application should leverage. It's not expensive to use, and there's almost no code or very little code involved. There's no excuses anymore. That's all I can say.
Yeah, exactly. If it was simple enough and low effort enough for me to add it to the podcast app with our, you know, relatively small user base on that, you know, it's got to be worth it if you're doing something bigger, right, where you actually want to care about it.
Right. And, you know, using these APIs, the telemetry client API, you could even add this to even a little console application. This is not limited to Windows Phone apps or you know, they have Java APIs, they have iOS APIs, so it can be done from any application, right? They all eventually call out to this REST service, the similar functionality available. So this is not something, you know, shouldn't be portrayed as being a Windows-only solution. It works across any platform.
Yeah, I think I'm looking at the full list, or I had it up a minute ago. It's even going into J2EE stuff, right? I mean, I can't remember the last time I thought of a J2EE deployment. I know there's tons of them out there, but, I mean, we're even leveraging that stuff, so.
Sounds great. Okay, that was very good. Very good introduction and detail into Application Insights. Anything more you guys want to add?
No, I think that was, like I said, I've kind of had a lot of fun playing with it. And just kind of seeing what I can get it to do. So I definitely recommend people check it out.
I think it's, like you said, the free tier. I mean, you got nothing to lose, right? So you can just check that box. If you're using Visual Studio, it's literally a checkbox, you know, when you go to deploy something for Azure or like Evan was saying, a universal app or any of those kind of things. It's super simple from inside of there, too. You sign in your tenant, and you basically check a box, say, yeah, I want that, and you're good to go.
Yeah, I hadn't. You know, I actually hadn't thought about the universal apps. You could now actually go and see, because you ship it once, it's one unified store, right? And now you could actually use something like this to actually get a sense of, hey, I've got, you know, 30% of my clients are running this on, you know, Windows desktop 30% are running it on, you know, phone, whatever. So,
great point.
I hadn't thought about that.
Good idea. Excellent. All right. Great. Well, thanks again, Evan, for that excellent suggestion for today's topic. And Kale, as always, thanks for all your input. We'll wrap it up here and talk to you guys next week.
Sounds good. See you guys.
Thanks, guys.
Take care. Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.